Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne and it's lovely to be back in your ears. How we doing, chaps? I'm here with George Corkin and Chris Woff. George, you all right?
I'm very good, yeah. I was in the away end at Spurs last night, so I had a marvellous time. I got very damp, but also happy. Happy.
Yes, quite a nice feeling that, Chris, isn't it? Unusual feeling.
In a weird way, well, as we know, I don't usually cover. I mean, Newcastle don't get many of them, but I've seen scant few of them as well recently. So at least George was there to witness it. But it was very pleasing all around. Very pleasing to see Newcastle play so well and to get that victory. And yeah, just nice to have a slight uplift. How was it for you, Taylor, to witness that last night?
I felt knackered by the end of the game, I have to be honest. When the Joe Willock goal got cancelled out, which I'm sure we're going to get into in a bit, I just thought, here we go.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of them, isn't it? But yeah, but Chris, as you said, George was there last night. And before we get into chatting about that game properly, do me a favour and please head over to podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm and subscribe and check out our Extra Tyne episode from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I'm sure George won't mind me saying it is absolutely superb. Pop your headphones in, make yourself a cup of tea, close your eyes and listen to the sounds of the away end with your guide, George Corkin.
Have to pay huge tribute to producer Ollie, of course, because it's his recording. That made it come to life in the way it did. But yeah, tried to do something a little bit different, really just trying to capture the sounds, the very special sounds, and not necessarily most polite of noises you will hear throughout.
Yeah, it's not child friendly.
It's not one of those, you know, where you put those nice bedtime audio things on with Matthew McConaughey talking, and it's not that, is it? It's like the very opposite.
It's not that, no.
But it is still fabulous.
Thank you. Well, yeah, have a listen. Yeah, put your headphones in, and you know, maybe have like 6 pints or something, and then close your eyes, and then you'll probably be transported to the away end.
You'll be somewhere close. Wonderful stuff. Well, yes, chaps, this is what we've got to talk about. Dr. Tottenham, they provided a welcome remedy, didn't they? An away win. What's the overriding emotion after that, Chris?
Relief, I think, really. Relief all around. We're going to talk more about Eddie Howe and the week that was, or a few days that were later on in the episode. But for Howe, for Newcastle, for the general situation that they are in, to have got the win was huge, because it did feel like if they were to go to Spurs, who'd only won twice at home all season, and they'd lost that game, Spurs, who hadn't yet won in the Premier League so far in 2026, given the away games they have to come in the Premier League, given that they are out of the Carabao Cup and go to Villa in the FA Cup on Saturday, just given everything, really, I think it would have looked pretty bleak or been very difficult to see how Newcastle clawed themselves out with and got that optimism. But at least now there are shoots of that. This is only one win. It's not as if all the issues have suddenly dissolved away. But for Newcastle to have got that gives everyone a little bit of impetus and just that lift at a time when it was desperately required.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm always one of those people who wants to kind of look for big overriding themes. I want to be able to kind of look at the season and think, okay, well, this is what Newcastle are. This is who they are. This is what they're trying to do. This is the big picture. But actually, last night was about the very, very smallest of pictures. It was just about getting through that game, showing a response. And yeah, to be in the away end, you do actually get that reminder about how lovely and and special the small picture is, that it's just all about that, you know, it's just all about that night. It's not about the context. I mean, of course it is. Every, you know, every game has its own context. Every club has its own context. But it was just about being there, getting through it, seeing a reaction, seeing a response. Let's, you know, put all the other stuff about how the team are playing, who's playing, you know, what the future holds, and just get through it and show that Newcastle United is still a sort of functioning entity. And, you know, they did. It was a great occasion. There was a lot of emotion, particularly at the end. And yeah, I think relief is the right word. Relief that that form of Newcastle still exists.
Yes, absolutely. And it was crap home record against crap away record, Chris, wasn't it? Something had to give and something gave. It turns out that Spurs are properly dreadful, aren't they? And they display kind of putting Newcastle's struggles into some kind of context.
Yeah, well, Thomas Frank has been sacked. So he has now left Spurs. It felt inevitable that was going to come at some stage. And Newcastle winning there tipped them over the edge, really, because it was identical records, actually, for Spurs at home and Newcastle away going into the game. Two wins apiece. And Newcastle have had a lot of issues recently, and I'm not trying to downplay how bad some of the performances, particularly Brentford, have been. But Spurs offered nothing, I thought, in so many ways, other than a five-minute period when they scored in the second half and sort of offered a little bit of a threat then. But basically, Newcastle went there. They needed... In some ways, it reminded me of last season and when Leicester City came to St James's Park, and it was a time when Newcastle needed an opposition who were going to offer them a real opportunity to capitalise on, and that's what Spurs did. Now, that's not to take away from Newcastle's own performance. They showed the want and desire to get on the front foot and to really try and take the game to Spurs, but they also had meek opposition who allowed that to happen, and Dr. Tottenham is the joke that goes around at the minute, but that is genuinely how it felt for Newcastle, that this was the shot in the arm that they required, and they got it. But and the opposition helped in that regard.
Yeah, Newcastle were good. You know, Newcastle were good, but by the same token, I think that was that performance, that occasion was a sackable offence. And I'm not, you know, I don't say that lightly, and I'm not saying that, you know, obviously there is build up to that game from a Tottenham perspective and what's been happening with Thomas Frank. But, you know, they offered absolutely nothing. The atmosphere inside the stadium, I thought, you know, aside from Newcastle fans, was funereal. That was the word I used. There was booing as the game's going on. There's lot of pockets of empty seating. I know we've had a correspondent talking about the absolutely eye-watering prices for tickets at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, but that's a bit of context there. But you know, it was just that they're in a relegation battle, and I can't remember seeing a home performance as inept as that from a so-called, you know, big club, big team. I thought they were, you know, they were absolutely miserable.
Puts the Champions League exploits into some kind of context as well, doesn't it? It's very strange that they've managed to get through so easily there. Again, Chris, three strikers on the bench, a combined value of £140 million. Anthony Gordon deemed the better option up front.
Yeah, I was actually speaking about this to some people inside the club this morning. I think that in some ways, I mean, it's not a very good reflection on certainly the summer business. The £140 million also includes Wilasula's price, but basically large part of that is £125 million that Newcastle spent collectively on Johan Wisser and Nick Valdemada, who had bright starts in terms of their actual on-field performances goals-wise, but Howe at the moment does not seemingly trust either of them to deliver exactly what he wants. So instead, he goes for Anthony Gordon. And so it is a bit of an indictment in some ways on that summer business. But at the same time, I also think it's brave. It's brave for a manager who was heavily involved in the summer recruitment, as much as there were difficulties and context around that, to have decided, actually, no, they are fit, but the player or fit in some sort of sense is Johan Wisser fully fit, I think, is probably not. But Anthony Gordon is deemed the best option there. And it wasn't as if Gordon was necessarily, it's not like he really looked like he was going to score for most of the match, that he was better in the second half than he was in the first. But Newcastle as a team just look better, I think. I think they just are functioning better at the moment. There were signs of that at Liverpool for 35 minutes before Newcastle collapsed. And then, yeah, they finally won a game with Gordon at centre-forward. I think if you include Man City in the Carabao Cup second leg when he was sort of, was he a centre-forward, was he just off Voldemort? It was five matches this season Gordon had played through the middle, and Newcastle hadn't won any of them. Now they finally have,
And yeah, it was. They just look better at the moment without either of the two strikers, certainly away from home.
There was something a bit back to basics in that team selection in some ways. You know, you've got Trippier and Byrne at fullback. Now, I know that is to do with injuries and Lewis Hall not wanting to put him in trouble, but that's a very 4 years ago fullback pairing for Newcastle.
Blast from the past.
You've also got, I mean, like, obviously the idea with Johan Wisse is that he's the closest to a Isak replacement that they could have got at that point. But with him lacking match sharpness and confidence, putting Gordon in that position makes it more like the Newcastle that we're used to seeing, with someone who can press and who's got pace, who can harry. I agree with Chris. There have been some good moments with Gordon in that position, even if he doesn't necessarily look like he's going to score. Going back, you know, right to the start of the season, that Aston Villa game that I was at, first away game of the season, you know, able to put teams under pressure playing in that system. And I think also, it was about having leaders on the pitch. You know, that was another thing. So when I talk about that back to basics thing, I think that was sort of part of it too. They needed to find a way, but I think it suited. I do agree. I think it suited. That way of playing with those personnel is recognisable for Newcastle, and I think they needed that.
I noticed Harvey Barnes drifting inside quite a lot as well, and he has a pretty decent chance, doesn't he, at one point where he kind of flicks the ball goalwards through Van de Ven's legs, and he's unlucky if he got a slightly sort of less complete touch on that ball. There's a chance it goes in the net, you know, and he's one of those players where he can drift inside. He's a decent finisher. You need him getting up around Anthony Gordon. The other one as well, on the other side, Anthony Elanga. The green shoots of recovery continue to grow for him, George, don't they? He was smashing crosses into the box and putting a few devilish corners as well.
Yeah, corners as well. I think Chris worked out in the first half that was the highest number of corners given by one team in any Premier League match this season.
I think Newcastle held the previous record from the Liverpool game as well, and they also got 7 in the first half against Brentford, so they are getting a lot of corners at the minute.
And they were, I mean, I kind of watched the highlights again this morning. Alanga's was putting the ball in. Some of those corners were kind of outswinging, but they were so close to the goal. They were all coming into the 6-yard box, and then it was Bruno from the other side doing exactly the same thing. They did put pressure on Spurs. That felt very deliberate. But yeah, Elanga, it does feel like there's something happening there. Don't have to go back very, very far to sort of to have been watching him and thinking, well, this guy, he just doesn't look like a footballer. And I think so much of that is about confidence. And since Howe talked about needing to show love to players, there's been a beautiful response from Newcastle fans. We saw it at St James's, his name being sung. When he came off last night, he walks all the way round past the Newcastle fans, just like singing his name, really good. That connection felt very strong. He was responding. He was tapping his chest. He was tapping his heart. And he won't forget that. And I think that, you know, building that connection from a very, very difficult start felt important. And he is now beginning to make a contribution. And so much of that is about confidence and mentality. We know there's a good player there. We know he's got pace. We know he can deliver. And fingers crossed, he's getting up to speed now with the way Howe wants to play.
And another player who seems to be getting up to speed as well, Chris, Joe Willock, was unlucky offside literally by a hair. We'll get into that decision. It was a bit of a ridiculous one, wasn't it? But Joe Willock said on Instagram, if only I'd gotten a trim before the game, his goal might still have stood.
Yeah, and that was, it had felt like after Newcastle's dominance in the first half, when we mentioned Elanga, I think it was at one stage, about 35 minutes in, 55% of Newcastle's attacks had come down the right-hand side. It was a ploy which they were going for, but Elanga was also delivering difficult crosses in the box, or good crosses in the box. The one that you mentioned for Barnes, that was an Elanga low cross. I actually thought he'd mishit it, but when you see it again, he spots the run of Barnes and does put it low towards him. Newcastle were targeting that area, weren't necessarily getting the success. They then win the ball in midfield. Jacob Ramsey immediately plays the ball through to Willock, and Gordon's actually making a run at the same time as well, and it looks like Mickey van de Ven, there's one angle where it looks like he could be quite a, well, certainly like half a body length onside, but then and so seemingly you see the first replays and you think, oh, on TV, oh, they're going to give this, but then it's, they're checking it. And I mean, I don't really understand how semi-automated offside works. Sometimes it says that they haven't got the right angles and bodies obscure it. I'm not entirely sure whether semi-automated offside came into play last night or not. Why it took so long, if it did, I'm not entirely sure. But then you get the still image of Willock, and it is literally his forehead, the top bit of his forehead, which is shaded a darker colour, alongside also his hand, which in itself obscures things further, because why highlight his hand when he can't score with his hand? And I think, again, it just brings in this... It's just so frustrating. I mean, what was it like, that weight inside the ground? George, I assume you have none of this information other than what comes up on the board.
Firstly, when he scored, it was a brilliant moment, you know, and in terms of that feeling of meaning, you just felt that. It was like a proper eruption. So... You know, Newcastle fans have been good. There have been those lulls in the first half, of course, where, you know, there's very little to bounce back off inside the stadium because Spurs fans aren't singing. They're not having a go back. So it's left to kind of Newcastle fans to generate their own atmosphere. And so there are lulls. And you get nervous. You know, Newcastle are attacking. They're not taking their chances. When the goal goes in, you've got a proper feeling of what that meant. It was massive relief. It was like a cork being popped out of a champagne bottle. It was fantastic. And then, of course, you've got the wait, and then you've got the disappointment. And it was, I'm not going to do an old man shouting at whatever clouds. I'm not going to do that. But I mean, I don't understand football anymore. And I think the disappointing thing, just from that sort of being there sense, was that when
I was going to say that
Chow then goes on to score, the eruption is much, much less. You know, it's the same position in the game, like you're 0-0, but it's like you don't believe it. It's sort of like you don't believe it when it happened. And so, you know, you've released your tension and then you've got that disappointment and you go flat. And so then when the goal then comes again, it just does not feel, it doesn't feel the same. It just sort of...
It's robbing us of those moments, isn't it?
It just kills it. You want decisions to be right. I've said I'm not going to be an old man shouting at things, but like, you know, you want decisions to be right. And theoretically, well, no, it shouldn't be theoretically. Offside is a fact. It's not like going through VAR and then interpreting something. Whether you're on or offside, it's a fact. And I sort of get that. But
I'm not going to shout at clouds either. But if it was up to me, I would take offsides out of VAR completely. And I would just leave it down to the, you know, red cards, ball over the line, penalties, that kind of thing. I would, the offside thing, I would just let the linesman deal with it. Just let them deal with it.
Well, if the technology is good enough, then that's okay. I mean, it's also about the interpretation. I'm not sort of like doing that sort of deep dive into that, but it is, the experience takes something away. I mean, it's like, you're right in the sense that if like Willock goes through, you know, the goal stands and the flag immediately goes,
you know,
up,
you kind of look then and you go, well, that's it, that fair enough. Yeah.
It might be wrong and you hope it's not, but it's instant. And so the disappointment is very quick to arrive. And it's the delayed disappointment. And then what that then does to the rest of the match.
It was some finish. And yeah, you have to say it's a massive disappointment whenever a knee slide that good is wasted.
100%.
And Joe Willock was really good.
He was.
And talking about the fullbacks being 4 years ago, here's Joe Willock, you know, a Mike Ashley signing, contributing, and it was a fluid midfield. I thought the midfield was actually good in that match. So it was a big shame for him.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on 2 purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Here's all the keys about, yeah.
We mentioned Malik Chow just before there on that second goal. Goal scorer and defender extraordinaire now, Chris. 4 for the season from him. He keeps popping up, doesn't he?
Joint top defender goal scorer in the Premier League alongside both Mickey van der Ven and Christian Romero at Spurs.
Lovely.
He scored more for Newcastle than he did, well, the same amount in the Premier League for Newcastle that he did for AC Milan and Schalke combined.
Wow.
In the league.
How many did he score in the Premier League for Schalke?
Oh, here he comes, Mr. Nitpicky. But the when we mentioned earlier the crosses Alanga was putting in and the corners, I think it was the 23rd cross Newcastle put in the box when they eventually scored from. And again, it sort of well worked in that Newcastle recycled the ball and the ball comes in and then Chow.
It's a lovely ball by Willock as well, sorry, I have to mention that. It's a great cross.
Oh, it's a really, really good ball. Yeah, really good ball from Willock. And Chow, yeah, Chow gets above his man, heads it towards goal, Vicario parries it, and then Chow, despite having to come down for his header, still gets the ball before any of the Spurs defenders and left foot, side foots it into the goal. And it was huge for Newcastle because they'd had the disappointment of Willock and just as the clock was ticking into added time at the end of the first half. And then that was at the very end of added time of the first half. So they went in ahead, and I think that was massive mentally for them, because if they hadn't, it would have been they've dominated this first half. And seemingly, all of the narrative around it was that Spurs, in the second half of home games, have tended to improve. They've tended to be poor in the first half and tended to improve, and you expected that reaction. So for Newcastle to have got themselves ahead, it felt huge.
It certainly did. And like we said before, Newcastle had that season record for corners in the first half of Premier League games. So Spurs equalising from one kind of felt a bit inevitable, George, didn't it?
It did. I think Chris may not completely agree with me, so maybe that was also the feeling on the night. But I thought, I mean, Newcastle did start the second half very positively, but I thought Newcastle were at their worst when they were ahead in the game. And I think that's probably conditioning, because from where I was standing, it's like, please don't sit back, please don't sit back. And then there was that sense of them gradually sitting back. Spurs did improve after half time. I think we have to acknowledge that. But there was a wobble, I thought, in terms of confidence.
Yeah. Newcastle had had 13 corners up to that stage, by the way. Yeah, they were Spurs' right. First, so that was the...
Yeah, yeah, sorry, you asked about the corners. And yeah, of course, you know, there is a sort of inevitability there. The good thing is that didn't become the overwhelming narrative, and that there was a kind of collective sense of going again. Now, there was a huge opportunity because, as I say, Spurs might have got better, but that, you know, only to a limited point. And Newcastle came again, but it is something that I think is still in the system, that there is that sort of, you know, knowing that you've been in this position so many times before, that you've dropped 19 points from winning positions, is it going to happen again? I think it's just human nature. It's human nature from the people watching it. It's human nature for the people on the pitch. So it does feel very big and very important that they've managed to not only close it out, but to withstand the disappointment of that equaliser and then going again.
And Spurs, Chris, made a little bit of a habit of getting booked for diving as well, didn't they? We've got to say credit the referee for those. I thought Anthony Taylor actually had a pretty solid game, to be honest. I thought he managed things well.
Well, he spotted both of them live. It wasn't as if he changed his mind. He actually he took his time and spotted them both live, Pape Sarr and Xavi Simons. And yeah,
they were awful dives as well.
They were awful dives. And so, yeah, credit to him for spotting those. And credit, as George said, credit to Newcastle for responding, because at that point it felt like they could have been teetering. Mm. But the fact that they scored and retook the lead so quickly, I think, was huge for them.
Yeah, this really felt like the match that Jacob Ramsey announced himself as a Newcastle player, George, didn't it? The performances have been encouraging recently, but he stepped it up to another level last night.
Yeah, I thought he was really, really good. And again, the same sort of thing that I said about Alanga earlier. They were bought as players who are kind of oven ready for the Premier League. That was the big idea. It hasn't quite turned out that way. Of course, Ramsey has a formidable list of players in front of them when they're all fit and on form. So it's up to him to force his way into the team and then stay there. But yeah, really encouraging. He's a dynamic player. They want the ball, those midfielders, and they can be progressive with it. And that hasn't always been the case with Newcastle's midfield. When you have Joelinton in there, who I love, you know, who I adore, you know, it might have been a good night for him, you'd have thought. Spurs away, a teetering Spurs team. But yeah, it's a dynamic midfield. It covers space. They're looking to be progressive. They're looking to carry the ball up the pitch. So again, more encouragement for him, has to keep delivering.
Yeah, and on that, it was his 27th appearance for Newcastle. He hadn't had a goal involvement beforehand. He has the assist taken away from him for Willock's goal as well. And then he pops up, and it's a really, really good finish. It's a good move. I mean, Ramsey's involved in the build-up. It comes all the way from Nick Pope. Ramsey's involved in the build-up. Good interplay between Gordon and Barnes. Then Gordon carries it in the area and just sort of flicks the ball inside. And then a really first-time, really good finish across the goalkeeper. Doesn't try to hit it too hard. Sort of positions it in the bottom right-hand corner. And yeah, you could see how much it meant to him. He celebrated in front of the fans very enthusiastically. And yeah, I think just huge because as much as we've seen encouraging performances from him, that he's very tidy on the ball, gets up and down well, can do a lot of the dirty work. He said after the game, Eddie Howe's been on to me. I need to have better numbers, goals and assists, and hopefully this is the start.
We had a message from Ruddug on Ruddug09 on Blue Sky. He says, as much as I love Sandro Tonali, is he part of our attacking problem before Brentford? 31 appearances this year and no goals. Tonali, yeah. Didn't start last night.
No, which I thought was, you know, was one of the sort of big talking points. I mean, it's very difficult to sort of necessarily read too much into team selections at this point, but just because if you're playing every 3 days, then there have to be changes. So, you know, who's being rested, who's being dropped, you know, who's being promoted, who's just... So, you know, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of game management going on in terms of sort of fitness. But this hasn't been the Tonali that we saw, particularly in the second half of last season, who was outstanding, who was driving the team forward. Now, obviously, there's been noise about his future in the past few days as well, but he doesn't feel essential to the team at the moment. You know, I'm not saying that, take no pleasure in saying that, because we know what quality he has. And so being able to switch things around and bring in players like Ramsey and Willock and for them to contribute is really important. I mean, so you don't want anybody to think that their place in the team is sacrosanct, that they can't be challenged, that, you know, that they're an automatic pick. We know that there are some players like Bruno who are incredibly important to the team's functioning, but there needs to be this competition. And so you take players out, you put players in, you want the players who are on the bench to come on and then make a contribution and actually be saying, no, I need to play, I want to play. And he isn't contributing as much as he can do and as much as he should do. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I would say that's fair as well. What is a major worry, though, Chris, is that potential hamstring injury to Bruno Guimarães. He went down. He was asking to be taken off just before that as well, wasn't he? Looked like he was struggling. And then he puts a challenge in and he goes down in a heap and is clearly in some distress. And he was limping around after the final whistle as well. Obviously, Newcastle don't have Joe Linton and Lewis Miley at the minute through their respective absences. So it could be a bad one to lose Bruno again.
Yeah, well, as we know, I mean, 12... Premier League matches that Bruno Guimarães has not started since his full debut in the Premier League since March 2022. Newcastle haven't won any of them. We know how important he is. And he sort of pulled the strings from deep. He was back in the number six position against Spurs. Newcastle can't afford to have him out for any period. A, because they already have those two midfielders missing. Lewis Miley, it's a bit concerning that Howard suggested before the game that he was hopefully might be back. That it was sort of a dead leg, which had affected the sort of his ability to flex his leg. But that is seemingly he's had a bit of a setback and maybe won't see him in the next few games either. So purely numbers-wise, but also just influence and everything he brings. Newcastle need Bruno Guimarães fit and available. It was Howe's comments were both... I thought both encouraging and also concerning. Encouraging in the sense he said Bruno hasn't had a hamstring injury before, so he doesn't know whether it's potentially sort of cramp, in which case hopefully he will be back, or whether it is something a bit more sinister. I think the early signs are that hopeful it isn't something too serious, but equally we just have to wait and see. It's still only sort of 15 hours after the game, so you'll be assessed today and tomorrow, and hopefully it isn't serious.
Yes, hopefully not. George, given how woeful Spurs were and how woeful they are now managerless as well, how much can we read into this win?
As I said, sort of near the top, I don't think it's about that really. I think it's just about revelling in this win for the sake of it. I mean, I think that was the only thing that mattered last night. The fact that Newcastle found a response to Brentford, to the narrative that was starting to build around Eddie Howe's position and around the team, and they needed to, you know, they needed a performance, they needed to step up. You know, I don't think we can read much beyond that, really. I mean, I would love to, but like if we talk about the number of turning points or potential turning points have been this season, you know, thinking that Newcastle have a platform to build on and it hasn't proved that way, I don't think we can read a lot. We know what a tough game they've got at the weekend in the FA Cup at Aston Villa. We'll have to see, you know, we'll have to see what happens there. But, you know, Howe said afterwards, after Spurs, that, you know, they need to show this on a consistent basis. But that's been something he's been saying after pretty much every game. So let's save that. Maybe save that for another day. You know, let's save that for Villa and see what happens there. But let's just enjoy this win and be grateful for it and the fact that they did what they needed to do.
It was quite the reception for Eddie Howe, wasn't it, at the end as well, mind George? And I enjoyed seeing that and him getting pushed towards the fans by Bruno and Trippier. It's been a challenging week for him, so I'm sure he enjoyed that moment.
It was fabulous. It was really emotional. So, I mean, you know, I wasn't in the away end to sort of be a vulture, sort of ready to swoop down on Eddie Howe, and you know that wasn't why I was there. I'd planned to be there for a long time and had a ticket, and you know, really thought it would be an interesting snapshot of all these away matches and sort of, you know, gauging the mood, gauging the feeling. To do with that sort of ridiculous sequence of away matches, because obviously we're in this run of 8 games, 7 of which are away from home. But then, of course, after what happened at Brentford, it did feel like something else. Yeah. And it's like, there is always that little intake of breath, like, what's going to happen? And throughout, you know, his name was sung. I think, you know, the first song that was sung in the away end, certainly near me, 10 minutes before the start of the match, was Eddie Howe's Black and White Army. People started singing it again 37 seconds into the game, and it was sung throughout. Now, of course, it had been at Brentford as well. You know, people talk about being booed off. It wasn't Eddie Howe personally that was being booed off on against Brentford. It was, you know, it was a collective thing. It's important to say that. But yeah, it did feel like a sort of big moment. And then right at the end, when everyone comes over to the away end, as per usual, to applaud, to take the applause, his name is being sung as he walks over, and he embraces Kieran Trippier. Now, that felt kind of interesting to me. It wasn't just a little cuddle. It was a proper big embrace. And Howe is saying something to Trippier. And I don't think I'm reading too much into it, but I think he was sort of saying there, he was giving thanks to his senior players for stepping up. You know, Brentford wasn't easy for Trippier, but he put in a big shift at Spurs. He is turning out week in, week out, game in, game out at the moment because of injuries elsewhere. And then both Trippier and the injured Bruno, who was okay to be on the pitch at the end, so we should point that, push Howe towards the away end. He's clearly reluctant. He tries to turn back, but they push him again, and then he punches the air with his right fist. He raises both fists. He waves both hands. And then, you know, you don't often see those expressions of emotion from him, but you got a sense of what that meant, what the result meant, what the performance meant, the fact he still has the players with him, and then, of course, the fact he still has the fans with him. I thought it was a really good, positive, emotional, and sort of head-clearing moment. It's like, yeah, okay, Newcastle United, we're in this together. I thought it was really important. Beautiful, beautiful.
It was, and it was. I think it was really needed as well, wasn't it? You touched upon it after that Brentford podcast, the post-match pod. I've never seen Eddie Howe so despondent as he was in that post-match press conference after the Brentford game. Honestly, my heart went out to him. He just looked completely bereft, and I was worried about him in that moment. But Chris, you were at his pre-match press conference. What was he like 36 hours on from that?
Well, first of all, let's just see. I mean, George, you were in the room for the first one. How different was? I mean, what did it? His comments obviously were very strong. How did he actually seem in himself?
Well, I hesitate to use the word broken, but it didn't feel too far away from that. And I think, like, it was very honest. It was very raw. He was looking at himself. It was completely introspective, certainly in, you know, what he was. There was no criticism of the players. He said, I have to do better, and then I need the players to look at themselves and, you know, ask themselves if they're giving enough. But it's also when he's being sort of asked about giving points away from winning positions and sort of saying, I don't know why this keeps happening. And if you're being forensic on what a manager is saying, that's not good, because it's his job to find the answers. And so he went away saying pretty openly, I've got to find the answers. I'm not doing my job well enough. Now, I think that's quite a big admission. I think, yeah, well, we should then come back to Chris. Now, I mean, in that, you know, in that absolute specific moment, I think he was very down. I don't think I've seen him as introspective as that, and really questioning himself. And so, you know, he needed to find a response. I don't think it was like suddenly from the club there was this huge, you know, pressure bearing down on him, because they want him to succeed. There's a, you know, there's a support network there, and they want him to succeed. It wasn't like what Thomas Frank is facing at Spurs, but it kind of needed Howe to find something himself, I thought. And, you know, thankfully he did. But yeah, Chris can then talk about how he was on Monday morning.
Yeah, so Monday morning, so it literally was. I mean, 9 a.m. Monday morning. He's basically only 36 hours or so on from it. I wasn't sure what I necessarily expected. I didn't know if I thought he would come in and still be a little bit downbeat, but he seemingly, and I think he basically used, well, Saturday night and then Sunday, as he does, to properly review the game and not park it, but sort of compartmentalise that moment. And seemingly he'd found that he hadn't sunk to the depths of thinking, I'm not the man here. And he was asked directly about whether he had any doubts about his position and whether he was the right man. He said, I have no doubts. There was the caveat to that, where he basically said, as soon as I think that I'm not the man anymore, I will step aside. And he kept talking about the club being number one. So there was a slight caveat there, but it was also, I thought, was bullish. And I thought it was someone who'd rediscovered that fight, that basically he was in his lowest moment on that Saturday, his lowest ebb, maybe at that point, just through the blinkered eyes of coming straight out of the game, couldn't necessarily see the way forward. But I think he had then decided that he had something more to give, and that this wasn't the end for him, and he was going to come out fighting. So yeah, I thought it was a bullish press conference. But again, I asked him about the players, because George said he defended them, and I'd said, because I think there was a bit of discourse that came out of the Brentford game that a few people had suggested that maybe not all the players are given their all, and I asked him about this narrative, and he came out and he said, no, I would defend the players. He said, I've had groups of players before you could question, not necessarily in Newcastle, but you could question their attitude, and he said that's not the case here. And I think the performance, certainly of the senior players, but generally of the entire team at Spurs, and then that reaction afterwards, I think hopefully gave credence to that view as well.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm happy. I'm going to get me suit measured.
Right then, chaps, on to the Lasses. An important, if seemingly cagey, win for Tanya Oxtoby's Lasses at Southampton. Jordan Nobbs scored inside the first minute and then put Newcastle 2-0 up just before half-time with her second, but Southampton pulled one back in the 88th minute to set up a nervy finish. Newcastle held on, and they're up to fifth, leapfrogging Southampton just 3 points behind third-place Bristol City, which occupy the playoff position with a game in hand. Newcastle are 6 adrift of second-place Birmingham City, having played the same number of games. George, they've got a little bit of work to do, but they're starting to get there again.
Yeah, we know the position they're in. We know what the opportunity is for them this season, and we know how tight it is. They absolutely had to win that game. They've got another massive one on Sunday. It's at home. It's to the bottom of the table, Portsmouth. And, you know, they've recently dropped points to Ipswich Town, which obviously was disappointing, and they can't do it again. We know they've got good players. We know they've got a good manager. They've had momentum at earlier points of the season. They need to go again. By the way, fingers crossed, we're hopeful of speaking to someone from the women's team quite soon on the pod. So keep your ears out for that.
Yes, absolutely. Right then, let's have a look towards the weekend, chaps. The Carabao Cup defence may be over, but Newcastle are still in the other domestic knockout competition. Albeit, Chris, they've got a very tricky tie, haven't they?
Yep, FA Cup fourth round weekend. Newcastle and myself will be at Villa Park on Saturday evening.
The football just doesn't stop, does it, Chris?
It does not stop, no. And the away games don't stop.
So much football.
This is the fifth of the seven out of eight away games, God. I think.
We worked it out. Well, I asked you to work it out because I was too lazy to do my own homework. But it's 8 games. So this from PSG away onwards, it's 8 games, 25 days. Chris says it's 24, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. 24 or 25 days, 8 games, 7 away, 9,290 miles round trip. So if you're a Newcastle fan, I mean, you know, let alone the expense of it. I mean, I said it last night on the Extra Time pod, but it does give you another appreciation of the lads and lasses who travel away. It was disgusting last night. I know we're not talking about Spurs anymore, but like the weather was horrible. Yep. It's like you question your life choices at various moments. Of course, it's well worth it. It's well worth it at the end. But like before the Spurs game, you've seen Newcastle win twice away from home in the Premier League. You've seen them win at Union St. Gilloise in the Champions League, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, and that's why you have to absolutely revel in those moments. Yeah, it'd be nice if they could put another one together, wouldn't it?
It would be. It's the third meeting of the sides this season with Newcastle yet to triumph, but they should have done at Villa Park on that opening day, George, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I've like banged on about that game a lot. I mean, I guess because I was there, and again, you know, not the same circumstances at all as Spurs, except that sort of all eyes were on Newcastle. I don't mean all eyes, you know, because all of eyes were on Thomas Frank, of course, at Spurs. You know, maybe Newcastle weren't the big story, but certainly from our perspective, it's like you're looking to see what version of Newcastle turns up. How will they respond? This is now going back to Villa. You know, how will they respond to Isak not being in the squad, refusing to play and train, to all of that summer of sort of that discourse? And I was like really impressed with what I saw. You know, they pressed hard. They put Villa under pressure. They looked fit. They looked up for it. Gordon played through the middle. Yes, didn't score, but that sort of energy and hard pressing really set the tone for the team. And it was, you know, I came away from that game feeling, okay, well, things aren't going to be as bad as they might have been, that there's something to build on here. You know, whatever happens with Isak, because at that point we didn't know. They're a really, really good side under Unai Emery. We know that. But yeah, they should have won that game. They could have won that game. Should have won that game. And you know, they should now go. I mean, God, I can't believe I'm sort of saying this out loud because I've said it so many times. But you know, they should be going there now with a modicum of confidence.
But it's also sliding doors moments. I mean, both for Newcastle there, if they'd won that game, would have been a very positive start to the season. They're then going to run by can't score. But also for Anthony Elanga, I mean, he has that chance right, within yeah. 2 minutes yeah. or whatever it is. And then also he actually feeds the ball for Anthony Gordon to force the sending off as well. So, it sort of sums up Newcastle's season in some ways, that one match. And it felt nearly, they haven't quite had those at either end of the pitch in key moments. And then at St. James's Park last month, the sides met again and Villa thoroughly deserved to win, despite the XG debate, which we had afterwards between George and I, and Newcastle missing big chances. Villa, just at that point, looked like a more complete side or more sure in what they're trying to do right now.
Jacob Ramsey returns to his boyhood club for the first time as well. Chris, he'll be absolutely itching to play after a good performance against Spurs.
Yeah, that transfer was happening at this point. I think it was basically being announced that weekend, and when Newcastle went there for the opening game of the Premier League season. As we said earlier in the podcast, this is Ramsey hitting form just at the right time. You think that he has to be in the side really after the performance last night, as long as he's physically ready and able to, particularly given Bruno Guimaraes' injury. And yeah, he got a really good reception from the visiting Villa fans at St James's Park last month. They sang his name. A lot of them were very sad, I think, to see him leave. PSR, academy player, the like, as to why he had to leave. But the emotion that he showed at Spurs after scoring on Tuesday, hopefully he takes that in. And despite it being his boyhood club, he goes back there and wants to prove a point really on Saturday.
George, do we think Eddie Howe will rotate? Can he rotate? Or is this game going to be the priority, the fifth, as we said, of seven away games in eight, with a long haul to Karabag very soon afterwards?
Yes, I mean, we'll have to see what happens with Bruno. Obviously, that's the big thing ahead of this match. It feels like what he's doing at the minute. I mean, I think there was this kind of back to basic sort of element to Spurs in terms of wanting leadership on the pitch. I think that was a big thing. I'm sure, that will be in his thought process. Can he afford to make 10, 11 changes? At this point, absolutely not. No. I mean, this is a big game because they're out of the Carabao Cup now, and you don't want to be humiliated by one of your big rivals. You want to try and progress. You want to keep your season alive is not the right word. They're still in the Champions League, but you would love to get back to Wembley, love to win things. I think it's very difficult for him at the moment to do anything else other than respond to what's happened in the game just played. So, nobody would want to take Lewis Hall out of the team at the moment, in terms of his form, but he had to come out of the team at Spurs to protect him. So all of those things are kind of going on at the moment. And, do I see him making 9 changes, 8 changes and playing kids? And, no, I don't. I absolutely don't. I think he will think he has to go out and try and win this game.
Absolutely fair enough. Right then, chaps, that's just about it. We'll be back with an FA Cup match day pod at the weekend. And do me a favour before then, get over to podinthetime.supportandcast.fm and subscribe if you haven't already. You can pay £3 a month for ad-free listening, or £5 a month if you want to get a lot of lovely extra content, including George's fabulous podcast from the away end at Spurs, which dropped last night. Feel free to check that out. Get in touch as well via email, podinthetine@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter, X and Blue Sky @PodOnTheTine. Right, thank you very much for your time, chaps. Thank you, Chris.
You're very welcome. I am hopefully not going to kill Newcastle's, can you say, momentum after one game of a momentum they've gained on the road by me then following them away from
home.
Very
small amount of a momentum, but we'll take it at this point.
Well, I think if you've only won 3 games, I think that's actually quite a lot of momentum. That's a massive amount of momentum.
Take it. Thank you very much for your time as well, George Corgan.
You're very welcome. My voice is still a little hoarse after last night, but what a thoroughly enjoyable experience that was.
Right then, thank you very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Time, we'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Have a lovely week. Bye-bye.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.